shore.
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
It's about 9 o'clock now, central time, which means that if we set them up and turn them on right now, they'd run until about noon tomorrow.
Does thunderstorm activity appear to consolidate around that eye?
That is storm surge from the Atlantic Ocean, the overwash coming in.
You're listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the weekly podcast series that takes an in-depth look back at over two decades of tracking hurricanes, technology, behind-the-scenes stories, and much more. I'm your host, Mark Suddeth. So glad you could join me, and thank you for supporting this exclusive podcast via Patreon. Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. I'm glad you could tune in once again. This episode is for January the 13th, 2021, and the topics that we're going to go over include a very humorous story. As we call this, Stories from the Hurricane Highway, we do have to have some stories, right? So I've got a very funny one for you. We can look back and laugh now, as they say, that took place during a pair of these Lowe's hurricane fairs, one in Pensacola, Florida, the other in Foley, Alabama, on the same day back in June of 05. And I'm also going to tell you about this very unique idea that I had to get the anemometer, that is the wind gauge, to 5 meters, which is 15 feet above ground level. I really wanted some kind of a method or a contraption or whatever, a wind tower, something that would allow me to get the weather instrument, especially the anemometer, at least 5 meters above the ground. 10 meters is the world standard, about 35 feet. And there's a lot of companies that sell these 10-meter aluminum or steel towers. These are called meteorological towers. But that's very difficult to do. It's hard to tow those around. There are multi-million dollar grants given to universities. I think of Clemson, the University of Florida, the Coastal Monitoring Program. And they do have these very robust, big-time wind towers that go up to 35 feet. But they have these huge outriggers. They cost a lot of money. You have to have like a diesel truck to haul them around. And so I'm going to tell you about an idea that I had. Remember, I have no engineering experience. I don't have any design experience. I'm just a geographer. You know what I mean? I like science. I like weather. I like maps, you know, earth science, that kind of thing. But I don't have any engineering background, certainly no computer-aided design background. I just have ideas. And I like to see if those work. So I'm going to tell you about this one idea that I had to help get our, at least the anemometer, up to snuff, you know, at least to 5 meters. And we'll talk about that and this very funny story. You're going to get a kick out of this as we progress through this episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. One thing that I have always strived for is data. I wanted to collect data during hurricanes and tropical storms and any other major impact weather event, really, ever since I was a kid. I've always been fascinated by data. I was always a little befuddled when I would watch television coverage and there's a reporter telling you how windy it is, and I thought, if it's that windy, you know, how are you wearing a baseball cap? And they didn't have an anemometer out there. And, you know, I just always wondered if they're telling me how windy it is, you know, by standing there. And they're trying to be descriptive. I get it. But, you know, why not show me? And I remember in 1996 during Hurricane Bertha, it was making landfall in the Cape Fear region, that Jeff Flock was reporting for CNN down in Carolina Beach. And he had a handheld anemometer, and they would show that from time to time. The cameraman that was with him would do these close-ups, and they would try to show it. The sand was blowing off the beach and kind of blistering his hand. I mean, it was pretty remarkable. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. At least he's trying to show the wind speeds there. And that was just always a big deal for me. And that is why this picture of me holding a Davis anemometer is my Mark Suddeth Productions sort of logo picture, whatever you call that, when I do my documentary films or my series or whatever, any video work I do now, that picture of me holding the anemometer, that's representative of data that I like, wind data, pressure data. If it's, you know, really cold out, and I like to know exactly how cold. If it's hot, I like to know exactly how hot. I'm a weather data guy. You know, it's just the way I am. And wind data is extremely important, obviously, in a hurricane. And very early on in my career, I had a lot of kind of pushback from especially people at the Hurricane Research Division that thought that what I was doing as a lowly geographer, I'm not a meteorologist, so my data collection methods, you know, are not very good. They can't be good. They can't be taken seriously. And I wanted to prove them wrong. And I learned how to do it. I talked to people who did believe in my work. And you're going to have that anywhere, of course. No matter what you do, you're going to have your naysayers, and you're going to have people that support you, and you got to latch on to those that support you, and you push through. And that is what I wanted to do. So I learned from different people, different scientists. I got advice on how to properly site the equipment, how to set it up properly, what kind of equipment, how to capture digital data logs, you know, the right kind of equipment to purchase, you know, not home weather stations, but the high-end stuff. And I invested in that. And we talked about that before, that going all the way back to the late 1990s, I began investing in this equipment. It was R.M. Young equipment. Actually, it was the year 2000 that I was finally able to afford that. And so as time progressed, and now we're all the way up to 2005, I wanted to develop at least something that I could take out, even if it was just one unit of whatever this is. I wanted to build and engineer my own portable weather station, almost like a portable buoy, you know, that you put out in the ocean. And so what I did is I worked with a local company here in Wilmington called Edwards Incorporated. They do crane work, fabrication, company shutdowns, you know, whatever. It's an industrial company. They were a partner in our Project Impact program. I knew their local manager, and we got along really well. They were all into the weather and whatever. We had a good relationship. So I asked them, would they be willing to hear me out and donate with some scrap steel and piping and whatever? Would they be willing to build a contraption, and that's what it ended up being, that was basically would give me the ability to have a 5-meter wind tower? And so I took them some drawings, and remember, I don't have any engineering, you know, skills. I'm not a designer, you know, I don't have computer-aided design or CAD skills, you know. So I sketched it out, talked with them. They do know something about fabrication, obviously, and they worked with me, and we ended up building this device, this contraption. I come back to that word, this behemoth. It was about 8 feet by 8 feet at the bottom. It was a square that they welded together a pipe in the middle that was, I don't remember, like 4 inches in diameter, and it had a couple of support pipes to it, and then it had these rungs that they welded on there, like a ladder, so I could climb this thing, and it would be 12 feet tall, and then I could, at the top of it, screw in a 3-foot mast, and now I'm at 15 feet above the ground. And on top of the mast, which would be a 1-inch outer diameter pipe, I would affix the anemometer. And voila, I would have a 5-meter, very heavy, very stable, very bottom heavy. That's why the bottom was 8 feet wide. It was like 1/2-inch thick steel. I mean, this thing weighed 400, 500, 600 pounds, something like that. It was ridiculous. But it wasn't going to go anywhere. You were not going to be able to flip this over in a hurricane. You know, that was my thought anyway. It had no outriggers. It was just bottom heavy. I thought about those Weebles as we had, you know, as children, that we had as children. Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. And those are bottom heavy. And I know that's a whole different set of physics as to why they don't fall down. But that was my idea. Let's make this bottom heavy. And I can make it even heavier because at the four corners, they gave me these additional small little posts, if you will, that were welded into the corners, vertical posts that I could then take and wait for it here, okay? Dumbbells or whatever, you know, like for weight sets, I could add weight to the tower. You know, maybe I could bring these extra dumbbell pieces with me in the Tahoe and I could add them to this if I needed to. Maybe it was a stronger hurricane and we needed to add more weight. We could. Maybe we'd even go get cement bags, bricks, whatever it took. We had this huge 8x8 surface area, and that was the idea. It'd be very bottom heavy, and they even built wheels on one side so that we could tip it over and then wheel it around and set it up where we want to, and we'd have a wind tower. Well, how are we going to cart this thing around the country? Well, I bought a large trailer. I think it was 15 feet. It was a pretty good cargo trailer, you know, flatbed trailer from them. They sold those. The Tahoe, you know, Chevy Tahoe there had a tow package and it had a hitch on the back and I was ready to go. So with the funding from Lowe's, I bought the trailer. I think it was like $2,500. And I got Edwards to create this wind tower, if you will, contraption. And they did that for free. They pro bono'd that, as they say. They donated it. And it was really cool. I mean, it looked neat, you know, and different. And so I was determined that we were going to set this sucker up for a hurricane in the 05 season. And we're going to nail some incredible wind speeds. And I worked with my partner Jason up in Raleigh, North Carolina, to come up with, you know, the programming on a laptop that we could read the RM Young wind data. We would use a Davis pressure sensor and weather monitor computer for pressure, house all the equipment inside of a Pelican storm case, as they're called. And, you know, we had done that back in 2004. That was nothing new. But instead of hauling an Isuzu around, we would haul around this trailer, wheel off, roll off this contraption, we'll call it, buoy, whatever, right? Leave it where we're going to leave it. We could leave it in a parking lot, out in a field, not on the beach, you know, it could get washed away in storm surge. You know, we're not invincible against those elements, the power of water, right? But just off the beach, you know, just inland from a barrier island or whatever, in an open area, a baseball park, whatever, and get some really good data. And that was the idea. So that brings me up to where we are in this second week or so of June. This thing's finished, and it is time to take it on the road. So now we're back to where Mike Watkins and I are going to go down to these hurricane fairs, one in Pensacola, one in Foley, Alabama. And what I wanted to do was to bring this device, this contraption, with us, tow it down there on the trailer, and have it set up with Mike, fully outfit with the anemometer, the whole bit where it looked like a weather station. It would be very attention-getting. You know, you wouldn't miss it. Leave it on the trailer, you know, at least make it a little bit easy. Unhitch the trailer at the Lowe's in Pensacola. Leave it there with Mike right out in front. It'd be an attention getter. People coming up, oh, what is that? They see the anemometer up there. It's a conversation starter. And it's just a good little piece of eye candy, I guess, for weather geeks anyway, to come in and start a conversation with Mike or the Red Cross or whoever is going to be there. And then I would go with just the Tahoe, which itself, as you remember, you've hopefully by now seen pictures and video of the Tahoe, the old Chevy Tahoe. You know, it had its own look. It had an anemometer up there, this roof rack. It was very wild looking if you think about it. And now that I'm older and wiser, I realize it was probably overkill. And of course, everything we do now is remotely operated anyway. We wouldn't even need that. If somebody donated it free of charge, it would still, I would think it would be impractical. We don't need to drive the vehicle into hurricanes anymore. There's no need for that. But back in 05, we were still in that mindset and whatever. So we have this very decked out Chevy Tahoe, the Lowe's logo on it, the nice stripe down the side. It was very attention getting. And that would be the focal point, sort of the flagship thing at the Foley Hurricane Fair, at the Lowe's Hurricane Fair in Foley, Alabama. So that's the stage that was set. All right, and I don't remember exactly which weekend it was. Probably the third weekend of June of 05 there. Mike was going to come up once again meeting me in Lake City, as he did for Arlene, you know, just a couple of weeks earlier. And he would leave his car there, join me, jump in the Tahoe. Off we would go across the Panhandle, landing in Pensacola, being ready to go for the Lowe's Hurricane Fair that Saturday. I would drop him off. This was the game plan in Pensacola at the Lowe's store, get him all set up. Those fairs, by the way, were typically 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. They were about 4 hours long. And I would drop him off, you know, fairly early, around 9 o'clock, get him all set. And then I would go on to Foley, Alabama, which was not that far away, off of I-10. You drop down south out of Loxley, Alabama, on, you know, what was it, Highway 59, I think it was, the Gulf Shores Parkway or whatever. It drops you right down through Robertsdale and eventually into Foley. And there's the Lowe's store over on the left. I can still see it plain as day in my mind. That was the game plan. So let's bring Mike back in as we go back down. And again, this really does have sort of a, you know, your comedy and tragedy combined. What a heck of a weekend that was. And let's bring Mike back in via Zoom audio as we go back and revisit that very interesting day, that Saturday, at the Lowe's Hurricane Fairs in 2005. So the thing about it was, I had that trailer that I told you guys about with this giant, basically buoy thing on it that was going to be our 5-meter tower. It weighed like 700 pounds. I had it on a flatbed trailer and it had these gigantic barbell weight things on it to help weight it down. And it was just totally over-engineered, but whatever. I was so obsessed with getting really good wind readings that I thought this is going to be the ticket. So I invested in the trailer. We talked about that. You know, I got Edwards Crane to build that contraption that I told you about. So anyway, I wanted to bring that with us and have it as kind of a visual out in front of the Lowe's in Pensacola. We knew that Mike was going to be outside. Most of these were outside, which is just the way it went. Sometimes I'd have tents, sometimes large tents, sometimes not so large. So the idea was, we will stay at a hotel in Pensacola. Now, let's talk about that real quick. This is so funny. These are just these little inside stories. So we've checked into the Red Roof Inn. I don't know if you remember this, Mike, but it was the Red Roof Inn there in Pensacola. It was really late. Again, that 600 miles that we talk about from Lake City, it's always waiting for you. But get to Red Roof Inn really late, and we go in, and what was waiting for us on the counter? Do you remember?
You were guest of the day.
Right. Just inexplicably. I don't know how that sounds.
Just for no reason at all.
Right. I'm not a Red Roof Inn. Oh, Mark, this is the 73rd time you stayed. It was the first time I'd ever stayed with them, probably. And I was the guest of the day. And I think Mike is the one that saw it. There's this little placard next to a jar of hard candy that nobody ever eats. It's like the worst leftover Christmas hard candy. And this is now mid-June, right? And it's like, Mark Suddeth, Red Roof Inn, Pensacola, guest of the day.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, that's awesome. Dude, what did we get? And they were just like, you want some candy?
And it's all melted together.
Right,
you know,
right.
They're blending, the colors are blending together.
And it's not even individually wrapped. It's literally a jar of that hard, crappy candy that, like Mike says, the high humidity down there was fused together. It's just like, I'm good. I'm going to pass. Well,
that was the stuff that my grandmother used to put up on top of the fridge to hide from me when I was a little kid in Camorra.
Yeah. Yeah. You put it out in a little dish on the table at Christmas time in the old days.
Never do that now. There's no way they could do that now.
So we went to the Red Roof Inn there, and the plan was next day, really excited about these hurricane fairs. I'm going to go to the one in Foley, Alabama, and Mike is going to go to the one in Pensacola at the Lowe's store. So we get up and we head over there. We go to the Lowe's store in Pensacola. We drop off the trailer and we put the anemometer on top on this mast. It had little like step things that you could climb up that Edwards Crane built in for me. And we had this black storm case. You remember that? That was the dumbest idea of that idea, is to make those things. Let's use black for no reason at all. They make bright yellow. Ah, screw that. Let's use black.
Yeah. I remember at one point, cause I was outside to talk about the tower and what it did and the functionality. And at one point the temperature reading inside the case was like 125 degrees. It was so hot.
Right. People would, so that was the idea. People would see this contraption in front of Lowe's, and it looks like a weather station. And this looked like a weather station that, well, I mean, it was pretty good. I mean, I don't want to criticize it.
Especially for the time. Right. I mean, it was ridiculously
heavy, though.
It was, I mean, it was over-engineered, but the idea was you have this giant, you know, 5-meter anemometer. You can get reliable wind readings, and it wouldn't fall over.
Right.
If we had strong storms, strong winds.
So Mike was there setting up. The Red Cross was always at these events, and he was with a couple of people that were volunteering at the local chapter there in Pensacola. They're outside, out in front. It's one of those just hot, blistering days. The sun is beating down, and I leave him there at about 8 o'clock or so, 8:30. I have to get over to Foley, Alabama, about 90 minutes later for my hurricane fair that I'm going to host in Foley, at the Lowe's in Foley. Mike's all set up. I introduced him to the store manager, the Red Cross people. We had the weather station going. Everything should be fine and dandy. See you later. When it's done, we'll go grab some lunch. All right, thanks. That's what Mike said. So off I go to Foley. And the one in Foley was a lot different. Foley, of course, part of just north of Gulf Shores, ground zero for Ivan and all things Ivan. Everybody in Foley knew about, in one way or the other, the yellow Isuzu from Ivan that was on the beach and captured the incredible video. And people knew who I was. They knew the Tahoe. They knew the Lowe's. I mean, this was going to be a really, really big hurricane fair. The one in Pensacola, oddly enough, because they were also equally impacted by Ivan, was not very big. But the one in Foley, man, they had like a circus tent. Seriously, like this giant, you could see it a mile away coming in. And it was, I mean, it might as well have been air conditioned. It was like, I drove in the Tahoe, people were clapping, you know, there's Mark in the Tahoe. There's just this, and I'm not trying to, this is just what happened, okay? It was the whole aura around what happened in Ivan was still there. People remembered. And so I drove in, and immediately people came over. Hey, Mark, how are you? Some of them had bought posters of Ivan. They remembered the stories and whatever. So we start doing the fair. Media comes out. We're talking to hundreds and hundreds of people. And you remember back then, even though it's 2005, we still had text messaging. You know, it was on a flip phone, but we still had it. So it's about 11 a.m. and I text Mike, you know, how's it going over there?
It's hot. It's already 100 degrees in the parking lot. We've had a few people come through. I can't find, no one will bring me a Diet Pepsi. I couldn't get my hands on caffeine, which was a valuable lesson to always bring my own soda with me. But at that point, they wouldn't give it to me. Yeah, I was thirsty, hot. Already probably sunburnt at that point. Yeah. It was uncomfortable.
Yes. And so I was like, oh, hang in there. I appreciate you doing it. You know, kind of patronizing him, whatever. Hey, we're going to go get, I was luring him to the other side of this torment with lunch. Well, hang in there because we're both done at 2. I'll hurry up and we're going to go to lunch. We'll go to like TGI Fridays or something. Yes. So just hang in there. All right. Thanks. So about 90 minutes later, I had seen probably 1,000 people come through the one in Foley. About how many people do you think came through the one there in Pensacola?
50.
Right.
Maybe 60.
Right.
But
those were just shoppers. They weren't frequent, coming to the fair, right? Those were just.
That was my first experience with the hurricane fairs. And so in my mind, you know, I'm like, oh, everyone is interested in this. And that's when I learned that not everyone was interested. And what the outreach was really about is to get, you know, the information out there to people who wouldn't otherwise seek it.
Right.
But at the time I was like, I kept introducing myself and handing out cards, didn't get a lot of feedback. It was just this surreal experience in what seemed like the Mojave Desert in the middle of summer.
It was. And so that brings me to this next humorous story. Well, you know how they go, one day we will laugh about this. Well, this is that day. So I get a text. It's about noon, 12:30. We still have about 90 minutes to go. And I get a text from Jesse. Remember, Jesse is our mutual friend. And I get a text from Jesse. He's like, hey, have you talked to Mike? And, you know, question mark. I'm like, and I waited a minute and talking to people and probably signing autographs and
sipping.
Right.
You were sipping tea.
Ice cold tea.
Ice cold tea. You're like, oh, I'll take a look at that.
Right. I'm not kidding, people. The one in Foley was just completely different. And, you know, and I'm just being honest. It was the whole Ivan thing. Everybody remembered. Okay. I got to emphasize that. I'm not bragging. I'm not trying to be that guy. This is what happened. Okay. And so I responded back and I was like, no, I haven't talked to him. Is everything okay? And Jesse responded within a minute or two. I think you better call him. All right. So I said, hey, excuse me just a minute, everyone. I need to take a phone call. So I went in the Tahoe, and which was parked under this giant circus tent. So it was in the shade. So it was about 72 degrees in the Tahoe, and called Mike. And he's like, hello. I remember that. He's always got that hello. And I was like, hey, what's going on? Well, I've had about a few people, you know, he explained it all to me. And my concern was, and this is just, I mean, come on. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. Oh, yeah, that's terrible. Say, can you tell me how hot is the weather sensor showing? Is that doing okay? I want to make sure it doesn't overheat.
Great. You didn't want the equipment to get too hot. Right.
Yeah. I mean, because the equipment can't go inside. I thought if Mike got too hot, he will go inside. That's what I thought. It wasn't being uncaring. It was the presumption of intelligence. You know, like...
You know, experience.
I don't expect Mike to wheel the weather station inside if it gets too hot, but I figured if it's too hot, we'll come. So I had him check it. And that's when how hot was it? You checked we had a Davis Weather Monitor 2 computer that would measure. It had this little sensor that would measure air temperature. And in this case, the air temperature was the ground temperature, 2 meters. You remember that like it was yesterday.
Yep. And the temperature inside the case was 125 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah. And I think you said that's because the Davis was showing that. And I think you said the laptop turned off.
Yeah. It overheated. Yeah.
And I remember, I was like, why did it turn off? I don't know. Cause it's 4,000 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah. The air around the laptop is hotter than the laptop itself. Yeah.
So I was like, well, have the Red Cross people helped you? And you said,
they were gone. Yeah, it's like they already left. I'm just out here by myself in the parking lot by this big tower. Because they're like, it's too hot. We're gonna pack up. And they packed up their van and left like an hour before you called me.
Right. It was so hot and miserable that the American Red Cross cashed in their chips and left. And Mike sat there in a chair in the blazing hot sun on this freshly coated asphalt. Not that 9 years ago faded asphalt, but it's still so fresh you can smell the creosote.
It smells like tar. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
The tar, right. I mean, like burning asphalt. Like it's lava, basically. This is where the floor is lava got invented. Few people know that. The parking lot was lava. And I was like, well, I don't think we're going to get any lip. Why don't you take the stuff inside, you know, the table and the hurricane guides. Go ahead and go inside, see if somebody can get you some water. I didn't think anything of it. I was so, I guess, focused on how's the weather station doing that I didn't think that Mike was not having a good time.
Yeah. And I didn't know any better. So, you know, cause I just wanted to do what I was there to do.
Right.
So I didn't want to go in and, you know, not be available to the public because, or be in a different spot than we talked about.
Right.
So I'm just hanging in there. Well, you know, kind of at that point all by myself.
He's just following the rules, man. For whatever reason, me being at the one in Foley was really special to the people in Foley. Cause a lot of people from Gulf Shores came up. Again, they knew the sort of story / legend of the Isuzu and what it did and that amazing footage that it captured there in Gulf Shores. So there was this certain, you know, celebrity status that came with the whole thing. It's inescapable. It's the way it is, you know, and I kind of got lost in it, admittedly, and lost track of time, lost track of how Mike was doing. I finished up and said, hey, I got to go back over to Pensacola. My colleague over there is not feeling so well. Because eventually he told me he started feeling nauseous. You're like, this isn't good.
Yeah, I think at some point I was coming down with the early signs of heat stroke. So it's like, I should probably drink water and get in some shade. Yep.
Yep. So I packed everything up, bid my fans and Foley farewell, drove the Tahoe out of there with my big giant Chick-fil-A styrofoam cup of cold iced tea, got on Interstate 10 up at Loxley and made my way east, dropped down
in the air conditioned car.
Yeah,
in the air conditioned Tahoe.
Yep. It's probably about 58 degrees in there, you know. Got down into Pensacola and went to the Lowe's store there. And Mike, I mean, you remember the scene in Joe versus the Volcano when he's been out on that wrecked boat and the sun has been beating down on him for days? He's there with Meg Ryan and just trying to keep her safe and alive. And he looks up at the sun and he, and Tom Hanks is just, his skin is chapped and it's red and peeling. And it just, the guy looks like he's on his last leg. That was Watkins.
I believe this is how it went down from there, is that we went to eat, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, I recovered somewhat. And then we crossed the bridge and it took like an hour and a half to get across the bridge to Pensacola. And it was fairly like 11 to 12 o'clock at night that we got to Lake City and we made a call, right? You were like, well, do you want to stay here or do you want to go home? I'm like, I'm going to try. I think I can make it. I'm going to go home. So I was 34 and thought I was invincible. So I drove home, all the way home. And the last 2 hours I was scared. I had to go 50 miles per hour because the oxygen sensor went out in my car.
So, oh, that's right.
And I think I kept calling you to keep me awake so I could get home. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how it was back then.
God, I mean, it was like trial by fire, literally. But you remember coming across the panhandle, leaving, I wasn't hot. I was refreshed and I was fine, but Mike was a little put out. And the rolling hills, oh, this will bring back the memory. The rolling hills just after Pensacola, you go past, there's like a jet that they have at a rest area that's on this it's a decoration or whatever. They have one of their blue angels. It's got it like a spike through it or whatever, and it's propped up there at a rest area. You get past that, and from there for about 200 miles, it's rolling hills. And that dadgum weather station buoy tower thing on that massive 17-foot trailer, You remember we would start going up the hill and the Tahoe would kick into like overdrive and it would just drive you batty because we couldn't, you were driving and you couldn't, like, it just wouldn't go. It's like the engine would just, it's like, and he would be so mad. And that's when I learned the gesture, as I call it, from Watkins. And when he would get mad with somebody, maybe we had to go around somebody coming down a hill. They were in the right lane and we were trying to get around them. And we're in the left lane now, the fast lane, and we're trying to go up a hill and the Tahoe would just struggle. And I didn't realize at the time that you had to put it in trailer mode. Duh. And that would take care of all that. It was still in just regular, and I didn't have the tow haul on like a moron. And so that's why the Tahoe was struggling. So people were behind him and going around him and just driving him crazy. And Mike, to his credit, wouldn't give them the finger and mouth a couple of words that we all know. He just did a very simple thing that I have adopted and have taken and used ever since. And he got it from the Gladiator days. A simple thumbs down. Thumbs down. Emphatic.
Thumbs down. Thumbs disapproval. Down. And what I've learned over the years is that makes people angrier than the finger, I think. I mean, I don't know. I haven't carefully controlled it, but I still use the thumbs down today in traffic. Yeah.
And it just amazed me. I was like, he's so furious. You can tell he's very frustrated at the situation. He's hot, he's dehydrated, he's probably close to renal failure because of the heat stroke that he had in Pensacola. And he still got it together enough to not give people the finger. He gave them the thumbs down.
Well, really, because it was like we're in this Lowe's vehicle. True. And I didn't want to do anything to, you know.
That's that thinking, man. He thought on his feet, and that was amazing. So he got through that. Got him back to Lake City. And then you drove home from Lake City against all of our better judgment. You thought, I'm 30 something years old. I can do it. But your car wasn't up to snuff, apparently.
No, no, it was like it was a Ford Focus. I think a 1996 Ford Focus. And once I got south, right around Fort Pierce, which is about 100 miles from home,
always.
The car starts to, you know, slow down and the check engine light comes on and it's just not running right. And that was a Saturday night into the Sunday morning. So nobody's open. So I'm like, what do I do? I didn't want to get a hotel. Right. I was only 2 hours, so, you know, 100 miles from home. So I just from there drove about 45 miles per hour
on the turnpike
for the next 4 hours on the turnpike. And every 50 minutes or so, either Mark would call me or I'd call him. Stay awake.
Yeah. So I'm on my way back, probably to Jacksonville, Florida for the night. Mike's going to go on home to Coconut Creek, and he's dealing with the O2 sensor and the slow vehicle and so forth. And I stop and I'm talking to him every once in a while to keep him awake. So I stopped at Baldwin, Florida. It's at Interstate 10 and Highway 301. There's a big train yard there. It's a major interchange. At I-10 that drops south on 301 through Stark and eventually down to Ocala and so forth. It's a pretty drive down through there. But at this interchange, there's a McDonald's. And I'm hungry. I'm like, okay, I'll stop at McDonald's. And I got this gigantic trailer thing. And, you know, it's 15 feet high. And I'm like, I have to swing wide around the drive-thru so that I don't tear off the roof of the McDonald's with this big buoy that I'm towing. So I'm about 9 feet out from the speaker and I got, like, you know, 12 nuggets and a large fry and a Coke or something, right? Whatever they have, 10 piece nuggets, I think McDonald's does. And I remember this was the worst McDonald's experience I ever had. And there's just some things about this career, and we all have them, whatever we do, where you just remember them and you don't know why you remember them. But I remember this. I was hungry, you know, nothing's open. McDonald's is open. It's a little oasis in the desert. Oh, I'm excited. And I get up to the window and I remember I had to get out of the Tahoe and just walk a couple of steps over because I had to, you know, swing wide. And I pay them and they give me my food and I'm driving out and they're closing down now because it's close to 1 a.m. or whatever. And that's it. I'm like the last order. They basically didn't cook the French fries. I don't know if he cooked them 3 minutes, 30 seconds or what, but they were in the fryer for 48 seconds. Had to be, because they were cold and still wet with oil. And it made me so angry. I was just furious. Like, because there was not, you couldn't salvage them. Well, there's one that was good. Nope. The entire, and there was nothing I could do about it. It was like, that was my worst experience of the trip. So, which is not bad.
Worst day ever for Mark.
But yeah, that was the early stages of the adventures that we would have, the early days. And you made it. You made it back home to Coconut Creek, and some time went by, and you stuck with it, right? And we'll get on to that later. But
yeah, I think the next mission after that was Katrina Part 1, right?
Yep. Well, that'll about do it for me. I am Mark Suddeth, your host of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. As always, thanks for tuning in. We will gather again around the old campfire and talk some more again in about a week.